Thank you. The recording is started.
Thank you so much. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our CCWG call number 21 on the 7th of April 2015. This is Thomas Rickard, one of the co-chairs of the CCWG. Leon Sanchez is not with us today. He sends his apologies, and I'm sure that some of you have wondered why it's not Leon's voice that's kicking off this call, so I will step in today, and with us it's also Mathieu Weil, and the two of us are going to split amongst us the chairing of this call. As usual, I'd like to ask whether there are any updates to statements of interest. Seeing no hands and seeing nothing in the chat, I assume that there are none. Regarding a roll call, we would use the usual practice of using the names that are in the Adobe. I note that Tijani is only on the audio bridge, so if there are any further colleagues on the call that are only on the audio bridge, please make yourself heard so that we can add you to the list of attendees. Okay, so we note Tijani, and we've noted earlier that Cavus obviously has some at least delays in using the Adobe, so his attendance is also noted. Are there any questions with respect to the agenda? There don't seem to be any, which is why we can dive into the agenda straight away, and that leads us to the updates by the various work groups, and with that I would like to give the floor to Jordan to give us a quick update on where work party number one is at the moment. Jordan.
Thanks, Thomas. Can you all hear me?
We can hear you all right. Thank you.
Yes, Seth. It's Jordan here for the record. Hi, everyone. Since our last meeting, the main work of WP1 has been to put together a small team of drafters to get our work going on the comment reports, the sections we're responsible for. We adopted a work plan at the meeting on the 1st of April, which would see us having three meetings in the next few days. We've got one on the 8th of April, one on the 10th, and one on the 13th. And we've got a draft of most of the powers parts of the comment report content, which we're going to work through at our meeting on the 8th of April. We'll have a second look at it on the 10th and then send it through to you on the 11th or so. And for other parts of our comment report, we're going to be doing a first look on the 10th of April, a second look on the 13th, and sending through on the 14th. So all of our content will be with you by the 14th to give a bit of time for the CCWG to have a two-reading approach. It's relatively straightforward to explain what the powers are. We need to do more work compared with our draft on setting out the exact standing and thresholds and so on. But where we are going to need to spend some time, where we're a little bit stuck, is in respect to the mechanism. Excuse me. You'll recall that at our meeting in Istanbul, we had a table with five different mechanisms on it. And since then, our legal advisors have been floating between here and the CWG with a number of other mechanisms as well. So we're going to have to pull all those ideas together. There's the super board idea with an executive committee doing most of the work. There's the kind of circles of designators idea for the appointment rooms of board members floating around. And so that's going to be the trickiest thing that we need to focus some time on in the next week or so. But barring any major accidents, I think we'll be on track to have all of our draft content through to the CCWG by the 14th of April. Once again, we've got our CRIS call since we adopted that work plan tomorrow, but then we've got another two before the next meeting of this group. So I think we'll be okay in terms of getting all that content through. Some of it will be in time to actually have a meaningful discussion on our call next Tuesday, and then after, I don't know what the details are of our next CWG meeting. So that is my brief update, Simon.
That was, in fact, very brief. So I suggest that we go into a little bit more detail, if we could, on a couple of substantive questions where we can potentially make progress. I think the document that you've been working on is quite impressive. So thank you to you and your team for working on that and actually making such good progress. I'm not sure how you would prefer to go about with this, Jordan, but I think that it might be worthwhile to maybe highlight a couple of points and bring them in front of the group to discuss and potentially seek or try to determine the level of support for things such as removal of individual directors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just want to get the update part out of the way quickly on the process that we're following before doing that.
Okay.
We've got a few questions that have arisen in the drafting that we could easily discuss, so I'll just try and find them on my email. And the first one really, that in terms of removing directors from the ICANN board, when we started doing some work on that in WP1, we said that we were looking at both removal of individual directors and removal of the whole board. And then we focused on removal of the whole board after the kind of discussions in the Singapore meeting led us to think that was the more important thing to focus on, and there would be difficulties with removal of individual directors. But a reasonable amount of the notes from lawyers floating around, so a reasonable number of those, suggests that actually removing individual directors is going to be something that will be reasonably consistent with the other changes we need to make to empower the community. And so we've kind of had a discussion in WP1 about pulling that back into the work stream onwards, pulling it back into what we do before the IANA functions contract comes to an end. It is a lot more work to do that, and it looks like it might be workable. So I guess the first question is there any reason that anyone can think of to definitely not do this in Workstream 1? Because the emerging view of Working Party 1 is that we should bring it back into that.
Okay, so let's open that one up. First comments on this coming in the chat. I don't see any hands raised yet, but please do make yourself heard. Robin Groves suggests that removing individual directors should be in Workstream 1. Alan agrees with that. So there's more agreement coming in the chat. As Jordan said, this might be a low-hanging fruit for us to actually include in our work. So it may be worthwhile considering to include it, maybe with the caveat that should it turn out to be more complicated than anticipated, that we then reopen the discussion to postponing it. Sebastian has his hand raised. Sebastian de Bachelet, please.
Thank you, Thomas. Maybe I will play, as usual, the role of the one disagree, but when you start to discuss that means that you want to discuss about one person and them a personal issue. And the problem is that you know where this person is coming from, and that means that let's take the example of the one selected by at large and the end user. Of course, all the other could decide to have him withdraw from the board, but it could be not for the good reason. Then if we start to have this discussion, you will have to have some balance and balance power. And I am not sure that it's so easy to find out how you discuss that when you are talking about one people, and you need to have some way of discussing that, and I am really not sure that it will be easy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. I think, Jordan, it may be useful for you to briefly update the group or refresh the group's memory on how this could be done. You know, there's some debate going on as to whether this is actually an easy thing to do or not. And I think that we should try to get some clarity on that. Let's hear Alan and then Cavus first. Alan, please.
Thank you very much. I think Sebastian's comments are rather premature. He's presuming there will be a mechanism that, in the case he mentioned, the other parts of the organization can remove a specific director without approval of the one who appointed him. That's not a given. So if indeed he's right and it becomes too difficult to do, then it reverts back to Workstream 2. But I don't think we should have it revert back or make it disappear altogether just because it might become difficult. I happen to think that it's going to be a relatively easy discussion. I could be wrong. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Cavus.
Yes, my question is that the criteria for the recall of the whole board member should be very, very stringent, because that would or might happen in a very exceptional and rare circumstances and conditions. I don't know whether that very stringent criteria has already been drafted or written, which is quite different from the removal of one single board member. By the way, at this stage, I don't have any difficulty with the removal, and I have not the same concerns as Sebastian. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. Before I turn to Mathieu and then to Jordan, I think we need to be clear that the question that was asked at this very moment was whether we should deal with the removal of individual directors in Workstream 1 versus Workstream 2, and we're already starting to dive into substance and difficulties or a lack of difficulties with such removal. Mathieu, let's hear from you, and then I would really like to give the opportunity to Jordan to briefly summarize for the benefit of the whole group what the idea behind removal of individual directors would be, so that maybe we can actually then focus on answering the question of whether this goes into the Workstream 1 bucket or into the Workstream 2 bucket. Mathieu, it's your turn.
Thomas, please. Thank you, Tom. Put me in the queue, please. Thomas, please,
Johnny,
put me in the queue.
Will do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So this is Mathieu Veil speaking, and really in the same line as you were hinting at, Thomas, I think what I'm hearing is potentially some misunderstanding about the power we would be discussing, and I would really like to turn to Jordan to clarify whether are we discussing the incorporation into Workstream 1 of removal of individual directors by their own communities or groups, or would that be a community, an overall community power where the community could remove any director individually without any difference whether it has been appointed, elected by any specific constituency or the other? And I think there's a little bit of misunderstanding on this, so I'd like to hear Jordan's view on what he was intending to work on in terms of low-hanging fruit.
Thanks, Mathieu. That's very helpful. So let's turn to Jordan, and then I have, I think, one old hand from Cavus, Sebastian, Tijani, and then there seems to be a new hand from Cavus, so we will follow that cue after we've heard Jordan. Jordan, please.
Thanks. Just to confirm, it's Matthew's first first option that's being pursued. In other words, where an SL appoints a director, that SL could remove them, or an AC appoints them, they could remove them. An outstanding action that we haven't discussed yet is a proposal for what to do with the NOMCOM appointed board members. It would seem unlikely that you'd want to make the NOMCOM into an un-NOMCOM. And so if there is a community mechanism built as part of our process, that might be the home for that, but we haven't discussed it. So the central proposal, in line with the legal advice that we've seen, that it would be the removal of an individual director by the groups that appointed them. The other point to make is that it's not... I've lost the train of thought. I was going to respond to something that Kazu said, but it's about the removal of the whole board. So, yeah, we're not talking about a random power for some combination of SOs and ACs to remove a director appointed by another group. No one is proposed following that one up.
Jordan, you're breaking up on us. So the line seems to be bad, but I think that... Jordan, are you there?
I'm here, and I stopped talking because I had finished what I had to say.
Okay, because there was some audio issue before that. But I guess the idea came through, so we're actually talking about removal of individual directors by their respective SO and AC, which I think from recollection is quite an easy thing to do and already possible at the moment. There wouldn't need to be major tweaks. There would be one complication when it comes to NOMCOM appointees, but actually we're not talking about the situation, just to be very clear, because I'm not sure whether everybody heard Jordan clearly. We're not talking about the possibility for other SOs and ACs to remove a director that they have not placed on the board. Let's now move back to the queue. Sebastian's hand is up. Sebastian.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. I don't see why we are trying to find cross-community possibility to do things and why we want to leverage internal community activities. But never mind. We want to do more and more and more in Workstream 1. I don't think that's the best way to go, but go if you wish.
Sebastian, I guess it's a very good point that you're making, that we should try to keep Workstream 1 as lean as possible, particularly when it comes to complications. So I guess your point is well noted, that we should be careful with the resources that we put into Workstream 1. Cavus's hand is up. Cavus.
Yes. My understanding is that there is no doubt and difficulty how to remove an individual board member by constituency except NOMCOM. The problem is that whether or not NOMCOM has the power or ability to remove the board member that designated by them. Am I right or I am wrong?
I guess you are right with that.
Then, in that case, I don't think that we need to have a support of community for removal of individual from SO and AC. However, recalling the entire board member requires the decision, overall decision of the community, because that is a very, very stringent situation. So the thing that we have to start to see what we do about NOMCOM. Would they be in a position to do or not?
Yes, I guess that's exactly the point that we need to dwell on a little bit more, I guess. I'd like to go to Tijani now, and then Ellen, and then I think we need to wrap this up. Ellen.
I thought it was Tijani first.
Excuse me, Tijani, please. Tijani, you might be on mute. We can't hear you. Tijani? There seems to be an audio issue with Tijani, which is why I suggest that we move to Ellen now, and then we try to hear Tijani afterwards.
Thank you very much. I also don't think that removing directors by the SACSO that appointed them is any really great difficulty, and I would not want to reject the concept of removing NOMCOM directors at this point. I personally don't think it should be the NOMCOM. I think that puts a level of obfuscation into something we're trying to make transparent. I think the community should be able to remove them, just like you can remove the entire board, perhaps with a somewhat lower threshold, because we're only talking about a single director. But I see no reason not to put it on the table right now and see if we can come to closure quickly on it. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Tijani?
Do you hear me? Do you hear
yes,
me
we can hear you now. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So I remember when we started discussing this point, we had an agreement all together that removing a single or some directors from the board is something that we can put in Workstream 2. And it wasn't because of the difficulty or the nature of the complicated thing. It was because there are reasons. People said, and it was not my argument, people said that we don't need it for the transition, so we don't need it for Workstream 1. And they had the argument to say if one or more than one or some board directors were very bad, really, and we cannot continue like this to reach the transition, anyway, the board has the ability to remove them. And if the board don't do that, we have the power to remove the board. So this was the rationale that was given. And at the first, I didn't agree, but at this point, I agree now. So I think that, as someone said, we have to keep Workstream 1 as simple and as light as possible. If we try to put more things inside, which is not needed for the transition, by the way, I don't think that it is a good thing for our work. Thank you.
Thanks, Tijani. As I mentioned during my opening remarks for this discussion, it was also my recollection that we would deal with this in workstream number 2. I have to say, though, that there were concerns raised by many members in this group that the removal of the whole board might be a very dangerous thing for ICANN to have because there is no continuity with the board, which is why it could make sense, particularly if it's easy to have a measure of lesser intensity to deal with an issue with directors. I see that there are three hands raised, two from Cavus, which I think are old hands because I think they haven't been lowered. And there's Robin. I had indicated that I would want to close the queue after we heard Tijani, so let's hear from Robin and then actually close this discussion. Robin.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Great. I just wanted to weigh in on this issue because I think this is a really important issue to have in Workstream 1. And we may recall Larry Strickling said a few months ago that removal of the board is definitely something that they're looking to see in Workstream 1 for a proposal that would be acceptable to the U.S. government. Then there was what we had initially in Workstream 1 was removal of individual directors as well as removal of the entire board. And then we got some legal advice back that said, I skipped a step there. And then there was some talk that said, well, maybe we don't need to put individual removal in Workstream 1. Let's just put that one in Workstream 2 because we're going to get the whole board in Workstream 1. But then we got some legal advice back that said spilling the entire board is not going to be as easy and as feasible as we'd thought. So that's off the table for Workstream 1. So we're back to not having any board removal on any table for Workstream 1 at this point, and I think it's really important that we get individual removal back into Workstream 1. I never thought it should have been removed in the first place, and I also disagree with the assertion that only those things in Workstream 1 that are related to the transition. That's not what is in our mandate. What is in Workstream 1 is those things that must occur before the transition can occur. So it's an important distinction of what's first, the horse or the cart, and what is first is the important accountability reforms that we need. And then when we get those, we can have the transition. So I think it's important to remember that the order or the predominance of what is it that we're after here, accountability reforms that can happen before the transition or accountability reforms that are related to the transition. So it's actually the former. It is those accountability reforms that must happen before there can be a transition. And I think that's really important to take into account because sometimes it seems to get sort of redefined. Thank you.
Robin, if I may, I'd like to ask a follow-up question, which is pretty much in line with some of the comments that have been written in the chat. To my knowledge, the removal of the whole board has never been off the table. It was just the removal of individual directors, so we would still have the tool that the U.S. government has asked for as part of Workstream 1. So maybe you can elaborate a little bit on why removal of the whole board is off the table. You know, that might be somewhere in the legal advice, and I guess it would be good for the group to understand this.
Yeah, I think it's something in legal advice, and so I think that's something that we need to discuss in more detail with the independent lawyers who said it wouldn't be as easy to do as we'd thought. So I think that the initial surety that it could be in Workstream 1 has now been called into question, and I think we need to look at that more closely.
Okay.
Thomas, allow me to say something.
If you could please keep it brief, please do.
Thomas, we mixing up the issues. Removal of individual board member by their constituency and removal of the entire board is one question. Do it at Workstream 1 or Workstream 2 is a different question. I don't think that we should mix them up. Let us separate them. We were discussing removal of the board member individual by their constituencies and removal of those by the NOMCOM, and Alan made a good suggestion or good understanding that for the NOMCOM should be given that authority to the community. As far as the entire board member is concerned, should have a stringent criteria and perhaps by the community. Now, whether or not we do it in Workstream 1 or Workstream 2 is different issue. Let us not mix them up, otherwise we get nowhere. Thank you.
Thanks, Kavus. With that, I think we have to close this discussion, which I think was helpful because some arguments have been brought forward that are important to take into account. In order to help Jordan, I would like to recap this discussion by, making the following points. One, many members in this group think that removal of individual directors as a measure of lesser intensity would be desirable to have. So I guess, Jordan, you and your team should be looking at this for feasibility. If it turns out to be very difficult and derailing in terms of time. We should bear in mind, I think, Tijani and Sebastian's points that we should be focusing on what is inevitably required during this initial phase. But for the time being, unless we hear from you about issues, I think your group is good to go and proceed working on this topic. Jordan, I'm not sure whether you have been dialed out to whether we can. Okay, so I guess there were a few more questions that you wanted to bring forward. So please go ahead.
There are, but you tell me when you want to finish this agenda item, and I'll choose my questions appropriately.
Well, I think we would be. I would feel comfortable with proceeding for like 5 to 10 minutes, so that we can take stock.
Okay. Okay, there's another question then, which relates to a different power. It's actually two questions, which, given the time, I'll only ask one of them. We'll get the other one dealt with next week. And it's about if we're sending back a strategic or business plan and budget to the board. We discussed in Istanbul how to avoid this becoming a repetitive ping pong where we keep sending a document back for the same reason. And the way that we've drafted that in what we'll be sending through to you is to say that any of those documents, strategic plan, budget, business plan, can only be sent back once on the same issue. So if you send it back once and the board looks at it again and says, no, we want to stick with this, then we can't send it back again. There would be different remedies. You know, the threat of removal of the board will mean that it's paying more attention to the community than it otherwise would. The particular director is a problem. They should be able to be removed and so on. It's been suggested that you might want to actually say that only once per budget or business plan or strategic plan. So it isn't that only one issue can be raised once. It's only that one issue or set of issues for any particular plan or budget can be raised. And then on the other end, people have suggested that it should be as many times as it requires for the board to take the community feedback into account. So as long as the threshold to send the paper back is met, it doesn't matter how many times. So it's not really a yes or no question here, but do people have a view about that? So that just to recap, the central proposal is that only once per issue could it be sent back for reconsideration, but the question is whether that should be easier, so as many times as you like, or even more restricted and only once per plan.
Jordan, before we open it up for comments from the group, can you maybe elaborate on the escalation path in case the board has not adequately picked up the concerns that have been raised by the community when asking the board to redo?
Well, the first point is that I think that the board does have with all of these a kind of community engagement process. So they will have an initial idea before they finalize their draft of what the community thinks. The second point would be a power to send it back, this one that we're discussing. So they would know if they'd got it wrong and if there was a sizable view in the community that the document was flawed enough to be sent back for a further review. But the escalation points after that I've got in mind are about the removal of individual directors or the whole board. If we've got to the point where the quite significant step of refusing and sending back a budget or a business plan has been taken and the board still doesn't respond to that, then it's those broader responses that start to come into play.
Thanks, Jordan. Any feedback from the group? Any guidance that we can give to John and his team? So, Jordan, maybe the colleagues on the call need a little bit more time to think about it. But actually, I guess the rationale behind this approach is that we can't afford to have a ping pong on rejecting and redoing. You know, so there needs to be a process that ensures with, or that at least has a high probability of the board actually taking into account the concerns that have been raised and do it right the second time around.
Yeah.
So
there are a few hands. So
yeah, let's hear from Alan and then Steve.
Thank you very much, Alan Greenberg speaking. We certainly don't want a ping pong effect, but on the other hand, we don't want to reject a budget and have the board make a cosmetic change to it and say, okay, it's a done deal. So somehow we need to make sure that we have some teeth in remanding it back to the board. And I'm not quite sure what the magic words are, but it's got to be something that's effective. Otherwise, it's a meaningless power.
So Jordan has responded to your point instantly that this is the reason why he suggested a once per issue opportunity to reject. Is that something that you would like?
Sorry, I don't understand how that fixes it. That says we cannot remand it back on for a second time on the same issue, even if they haven't really fixed what we were talking about. So that sounds like the antithesis of what I was looking for. But maybe I'm misunderstanding.
Could I just briefly respond to that, Thomas?
Please do.
It's more about the politics of it, Alan. I think that as long as we don't design the power in a way that says you have to table all your issues at the first call, by the board knowing that it's the budget to be sent back on a related or different issue, it increases the pressure on them to get it right in the first response, because they'll know that the community mechanism can send it back on a different issue if they're not happy with the response on the first one. So, it's just kind of a deep-blinked first exercise at that point. I don't think the community would abuse a limited number of possible responses. If there really was a situation where we're doing a back and forth and not approval, then that does indicate a bigger problem, which probably should be solved in a bigger way.
Well, thanks, Jordan.
May I come back? I tend to agree, and remember, I suggested a line item rejection, which we need to look at some point in the future and not Workstream 1, and maybe that addresses it in a cleaner way. I really have a problem saying we could bounce it a second time on a different subject, which we sort of make up artificially just because we're not happy with the response. So in my mind, that still needs some work. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Let's hear Steve and James, and after that, I'm going to close the queue. Steve, please.
Thank you. Steve Del Bianco with the CSG. I believe that we should not be limited in continuing to reject a budget if the board fails to take into account our previously expressed concerns. I added to this draft document that we could avoid putting the company and the corporation at risk by saying if we had sustained disagreement, ICANN could continue to operate under the previous year's approved budget. So whatever expenditure levels were in place last year would continue to operate at that level under that financial authority so that we could continue to run ICANN while we work this out. But I don't believe we can lose all our leverage by having only one bite at that apple. And let me add that Jordan's really on to something, though, in that our first set of objections to the budget should preclude us from coming up with brand new objections to old subject matter afterwards. I would say that all of our objections have to be lodged when we reject the budget. And we could re-object to those same issues if the board failed to come up with a compromise or failed to listen. But I don't think we should introduce brand new gripes two or three iterations down the road. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. James.
Thomas, can you put me on the queue?
James speaking. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, so we're going to hear you first, and after that, Tijani.
Okay, thank you, Thomas. And I just want to echo some of my agreement with Steve that in the event that the budget is rejected, that we would use the previous budget as a contingency. I do agree with Alan that limiting the number of rejections would could create some interesting gaming scenarios. For example, if the community rejected the budget on a given point, that perhaps a second budget would be submitted with changes unrelated to the point that caused the objection. So what I think would be more perhaps a better line or path to take this issue would be something like what we see currently when the board and the GAC are engaged in a consultation to work out any differences between GAC advice and a board decision. I think something similar could be invoked here, where the community group or some subset of that group would be compelled to engage with the board to or with staff to work out the reconcile the outstanding issues in the budget while it continues to operate under that previous year's budget. So I think there's opportunities here. I don't think that we should arbitrarily limit the number of objections. I don't think that this thing should be a ping pong where it's going back and forth. That's certainly not a hallmark of a mature and stable organization. So, calling some sort of emergency consultation or negotiation to work out those differences might be the best approach. Thank you.
Thanks, James. Tijani?
Thank you, Thomas. I have proposed in Istanbul that the accountability mechanisms that you want to empower the community to reject the budget shouldn't be triggered after the board approving the budget. I propose that we do it in several steps. Now we have an interaction mechanisms with the finance department, and the community is interacting with the finance department so that the budget will be shaped in common understanding between the community and the staff. And this is working well now. So if we trigger the mechanism not at the adoption, at its adoption by the board, but before, so that we can follow all the steps of the development of the budget, we will minimize the risk of having a budget rejection by the community, since the community will be participating in the development of the budget. So I don't want to have the community reject the budget and then the board accept or not accept the reasons of the community, and we may have several months without budget, as Steve said and as I said before. Thank you.
Thanks, Tijani. I think we should try to recap this very interesting discussion. The points that I take away from it, and this is certainly not not a decision made by this group, but rather an attempt to recap some direction for Jordan and his team, is that the idea of having a mandatory liaison process between the community and the board suggested by many. Also, the notion of having continuous operations on the basis of the previous year's budget, so that there is no gap, that there shouldn't be the limitation to invoke the process, so that actually the community has sufficient power and that the power has teeth, the community should voice all their concerns and not sequentially base their objections on different reasons each and every time, and so that maybe I can add the process can be done numerous times, but that maybe the community gets the opportunity to consider spilling the board or removing the board in parallel, so they are not limited to using this process. Should there be the unlikely case that the board is trying to game the system, I think I would like to leave it there for Jordan to further work on this subject. And since this is a very fruitful discussion, Jordan, if we could very briefly take a third question and then move to work party number two.
Thanks. This has been very helpful. I'm just looking at the list of questions I prepared, but none of them, I think, are going to be manageable in that time frame. We've covered the two topic areas that I was hoping to cover. So actually, if it's okay with you, I'd be happy to move on.
Then maybe I can suggest that we try to get the group's consent or objection to at least preliminary closing the list of things that should go into work stream number one. You know, maybe you can briefly mention the areas that you are working on, so that we have clarity that there will likely no further tasks added to the document that you're working on.
Okay, yeah, I can do that. So aside from the bit of work about what the mechanism is to let all this happen, the powers that we've got are to reject the budget business plan strategy, to reject changes to the ICANN bylaws, to be an approval body in any changes to the so-called fundamental bylaws or entrenched or golden bylaws, the power to recall individual ICANN directors, the power to recall the entire ICANN board. Those are the ones that we're working on in Workstream 1 that have fed through from the all the early work that was done. So none of them dropped off the list, if you like.
Thank you. That's very helpful. So should anyone in the group wish more topics to be included in Workstream 1 for Jordan's team, please make yourself heard. Otherwise, I think we should call this list finite, unless we need to reopen the discussion due to new findings. Okay, I don't see any further comments. I think Cavus's hand is still an old hand, which wasn't lowered in the meantime. So with that, I suggest we thank you, Jordan, and your team for an excellent piece of work. We're looking forward to receiving an updated version of the document. And I'd like to turn to Becky now to give us an update on work party number two.
We are working away. I have been out of town for the past couple of days, so I have not yet incorporated all of the changes that we have from last week on the independent review and on the the mission and commitments and core values. Ed Morris, I don't know if Ed is on the line or not, but he's done some good work on the reconsideration and is drafting a series of questions ombudsman is drafting questions regarding the ombudsman process and possible enhancements for the ombudsman process that would be ready to go. And then, you know, when we should be able to turn around another draft on all of the templates so that we can be in time for the circulation later this month.
Thanks, Becky. Are there any topics that you would specifically bring in front of the group for discussion?
Well, one topic came up regarding sort of the, and this has been a question about the kind of community standing, potentially affected standard. The representative to the GAC from Spain, Pedro, asked a question on the list about sort of what he was calling potentially affected parties, and what I interpreted to mean sort of parties who would be affected if a particular decision or action took place, but who might not be affected in advance of any action or decision on the part of the, you know, by the board or whoever else it would be. And his example was, that, you know, basically someone might not be harmed until the action was taken. Would those people have standing? And my sort of instinctive response to this, but it's not something that I have discussed with the group yet, and so I'd be interested in people's input on it, was that, you know, to the extent that you might be harmed if an action was taken and you wanted to invoke independent review, the standard would be similar to what we see in the current you know, current cases now, but perhaps a little bit different. In a typical, in a court case, you could go into court and ask the decision maker to stay an action from taking place if you were able to show that, you know, that that you were likely to win if on the merits, and there was no real remedy that would be adequately protect you once the decision had taken place. In arbitration, the current arbitration rules that ICANN operates under, the standard is actually quite a bit lower. So in one case, I want to emphasize, putting aside the merits of any particular independent review, we have had recent cases where the panelists have been have issued a stay, basically preventing ICANN from taking a particular action. And so the question is, you know, do we want to have a standard that is, you know, sort of a more amorphous standard about, you know, the interests of, you know, would be served by considering this issue in advance, or do we want to have a sort of more standard judicial standard that says basically you need to show, in order to prevent ICANN from acting, you need to show that you're likely right, and that if ICANN moves forward, you're going to be harmed in a way that, that can't be fixed.
Thanks, Becky. Can we hear views from the group? Maybe people need to digest this.
Yeah, it's a kind of complication. It's a kind of complicated standard, so I will be sending out the question, but it is a real situation because in arbitration, the standard for what we lawyers call injunctive relief is actually quite a bit lower than it is in a normal court case.
And what would your recommendation be, or do you have any preference?
I think it's a really hard question. I think it's a very difficult question. I mean, I guess I'm inclined, you know, to to think that if you have the higher standard, the fact that there's the standard that says you need to at least make a convincing case that you're right, and there's no way to fix the problem if I can move it moves ahead, is more comfortable in the sense that it sort of prevents or it discourages, it can remove roadblocks placed by frivolous filings.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, Becky, it's good that you have mentioned this to the group. I think the group is now eagerly waiting for something to read on this, maybe digest it further and then comment on it. Can you give us an indication as to when you will likely share a document on this with the group?
I will attempt to do something later today. This just came up this morning, and as I said, I've been out for almost a week now, so I'll send that around to the group for comments as well. I also am hoping, I know Robin's on, and I'm hoping that we can get some comments on the template that Robin sent around. And Robin, I don't know if you have gotten input that I haven't seen on the reconsideration.
Hi, this is Robin. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Yes, there was some more input that we've gotten in the last week since the template that was sent around just before last week's Workstream 1 meeting. So I would be happy to incorporate that into a revised template and send that around later today or tomorrow if that works for folks. So if there are other comments that people want to add, now would be a good time.
Great. Thanks, thanks, Robin. So will your piece, Robin, be included in the document that Becky is going to share?
I would definitely be happy with that, but I guess it's Becky's document, and so let her say what.
No, okay. I thought it was your document, Robin. I think.
Oh. Okay, you're talking about the reconsideration template. Okay, yes, that's the one I'm happy to share. I don't know if there's another one you're referring to.
It's not decisive whether it's going to be in one file or not, but I guess the group would be interested in when they can expect something in their inboxes to go through.
Okay, well, I'm happy to make those revisions to the template for the reconsideration request and send that out in the next 24 hours. Does that work for others? Does that fit with the schedule?
Yeah, I think that would be great. I didn't attend last week's call, but I guess you already gave a great update on what you did, and this looks actually quite promising. So thank you very much, Robin. Becky, are there any other points that you would like to raise or get guidance from the group on?
No, I think that what we will be sending around is a fairly annotated statement, and then a revised copy of the statement of mission. And to Adam's point, Adam asked me earlier, what we are attempting to demonstrate is the source for all of the original wording in the bylaws as they exist now. And then to make very clear what we're changing and what we're not changing.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Mathieu's hand is raised. Mathieu.
Sorry, I took some time to unmute. This is Mathieu speaking. Becky, I think we have clarity on the reconsideration, and obviously Robin is going to send us a revised version. And you mentioned the revised version of the mission and core values. Can you maybe tell us when we should expect the independent review panel revised version as well?
That will be by the end of the week as well.
Okay. So we would have those three items basically ready for a discussion at our next call.
Right. And I don't know if Ed is on the line, but hopefully we will also have questions on the ombudsman.
Okay. Thanks, Becky. Matthew, please.
Go ahead. No, I was just wondering whether the ombudsman item would be workstream one and was on the same track of urgency.
I mean, I can't recall whether we put the ombudsman on workstream one or not. I have to go back and look at the list.
This is Thomas. At least from my recollection, I think that's something that could be dealt with in workstream two.
I mean, it strikes me that way, but I have to go back and look at the list.
But maybe we can test the waters with the group whether there's any objection to dealing with the ombudsman question in workstream number two.
Assuming that we have in place the tools to make the changes we need.
Yes. Jordan's hand is up. Jordan, please.
The only thing that I thought might be workstream one in respect to the ombudsman was giving an understanding for the IRP or something like that. Is that memory right, or am I imagining things?
That's possible, but that would be the question of standing only. But that would not mean that we have to deal with a revision of the ombudsman function, and Chris also as well as Cheryl confirmed that that from their memory that's something we can do in workstream number two. So unless there are objections, we should continue on the basis of dealing with the ombudsman question in workstream number two.
Yeah, I think, though, that if we have questions about it, you know, we may want to consider, based on how, whether some of them should be included in the initial consultations.
Well, certainly, if we do have things ready to include in the report, by all means, we should proceed doing that so that we get information from the community. In terms of preparing recommendations for public comment, I think we should try to confine ourselves to what's inevitably required. And let's also bear in mind that the community will have a huge task in front of it by looking at our as well as the CWG's proposals. So I guess the less information we put in there for them to digest, the more they might appreciate it, but by
that
I mean,
makes sense.
If there are points that you have relating to the ombudsman, let's make sure that they're not lost. And if and where it makes sense, we should include it in the report. With that, I would like to close the discussion on work party number two. Becky, thanks so much for taking care of this, and we're looking forward to the documents that are going to be circulated. And for the whole group, please make sure that you keep your eyes open for something to come into your inboxes so that we can have an informed discussion on this item during next week's call. And we will make sure that we have sufficient time reserved. This time we've put more time into workstream number one, but I think we had a very good substantive discussion on the items brought up by Jordan, and we might do it the other way around during next week's call. I would then briefly like to turn it to Cheryl. We're not going to need to spend much time on the stress test item, but Cheryl, there's one item that you wanted to raise,
yes.
So please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Cheryl Langdonor for the record, and I will, of course, hand to Steve to briefly take you through a minor update on some of the text in the current version, which is version 18 of our stress test documentation. And, of course, you all know the wiki space to go and find that, but I think staff will probably put that in the chat anyway. What we did want to do, however, is preempt two things. First of all, to remind everybody that the Stress Test Working Party will be holding one of its teleconference calls in about 16 or so hours, I believe. It's 1100 UTC, and, of course, everyone is welcome to join us on that. That's the continuation of our work in general, and we'll also start looking at bringing across particular items that CWG may feel are not completely covered in the 25 that we've already got running within our CCWG work. That's work that Avery and I are particularly focused on, but haven't had time to do just yet. The other thing we wanted to do is pre-warn everybody that as of, as Steve will describe to you recently, some wording for relating to potential bylaw changes to do with Stress Test 18 went to Work Party 1 and 2, and he'll very briefly mention the outcomes of at least the Work Party 1 discussion on that, all of which means that the co-chairs would like us to spend some time on the next week's call, probably about 30 minutes in the agenda, to discuss as a committee of the whole that particular activity of the outcomes of Stress Test 18. So with that preamble, and thanks, Steve, to popping in the links, over to you, Steve, for a very brief bringing them all up to date. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Steve Del Bianco here. Stress Test 18 is one that has been discussed starting in the Singapore meeting, and the Stress Test Work Team was entirely comfortable with proceeding, although a number of you realize that this stress test deals with ICANN's obligations to enter consultations with the GAC if it chooses not to follow GAC advice. So it's a very sensitive issue, and I realize we didn't get to it in Istanbul. But to keep this one alive, because it is quite clearly an essential element of NTIA's acceptance of the transition, to keep it alive, but to show this true spirit of compromise with concerns expressed by some GAC members, we came up with a proposal. To refresh your memory, Stress Test 18 says, suppose the GAC changed its current procedure for adopting advice. Currently, the GAC's operating procedures say that they use consensus, understood to mean the practice of adopting decisions by general agreement in the absence of any formal objection. But the GAC, and only the GAC, controls its own operating procedures, and it can change them. The stress test is, what if the GAC were to change to something like simple majority for its advice? If they did so, should the ICANN bylaws continue to oblige ICANN to take all of that advice under consideration the same way as if it were consensus advice? We've gone back and forth on that, and the stress test work party, along with work party number one, who discussed it on April the 1st, feels pretty good about a proposal to modify the original stress test recommendation. So if you scroll your document to the top of page 2, you will see the bylaws text today, and then in bold underlined the proposed change. If you'll note in section J on page 2, the current bylaws have a key sentence in there that says, the Government Advisory Committee and the ICANN Board will then try in good faith and in a timely and efficient manner to find a mutually acceptable solution. What we are suggesting in response to Stress Test 18 is to add the phrase right in front of that sentence to say, with respect to government advisory committee advice that is supported by consensus, the GAC and the board will try in good faith to find a mutually acceptable solution. So it qualifies that the obligation to enter this consultation to finding of a mutually acceptable solution is the only part of ICANN's obligation that is conditioned on it being consensus. And we're not suggesting that we have to adopt today's definition of consensus from the GAC, the absence of an objection. It may well be that the GAC, similar to CCNSO, ALAC, and GNSO, the GAC may come up with its own definition of what constitutes consensus. So there was an idea of letting the GAC work that out on their own if and when they ever decide to. But in work stream one, to accommodate the U.S. government's insistence that we not increase ICANN's accountability to government and intergovernmental bodies as a result of the transition, we believe this particular change to the bylaws, ICANN's bylaws, should be part of work stream one, as indicated by stress test number 18. And this is part of why the stress tests are useful. They can be something that we might have otherwise missed. In this case, we have a pretty clear indication from the U.S. government that this is an essential part of meeting their conditions for the transition. The rest of this document is some compilation of comments that came in from three GAC members, a comment from NTIA, and then the final page was my personal recommendation on how to find a path forward on this. So I'll stop there, Thomas, and take questions if you like.
Thanks very much, Steve and Cheryl, as usual. This was intended to give a heads up to the whole group that we're going to have a full debate on this during next week's call. So I would suggest that although a conversation on this is starting in the chat, that given the late hour, we postpone to the discussion until next week. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Mathieu to chair the next section of the agenda, which is going to be the legal group update.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And I think it was very significant that we spent a large part of our call on the updates from the working parties, and just a reminder that we are in a process of trying to converge to public comment. And, of course, legal advice is key here because it's important that it's informing our deliberations as much as possible. This particular agenda item is just an update on where we are. I just want to acknowledge the amazing work that's being done by Leon and the legal group to synchronize with the independent advisors, and thank these legal advisors for being here in the call. And it's, I think, very useful for them to hear our discussions on the different work parties right now. The update I'd like to provide is quite short. It's a reminder of the decisions that were made about how to interact with the legal advisors during our last call and during the legal groups, and some information that I think are valuable for the whole group. First of all, it's been agreed that Sidley Austin is the coordinating firm among the two advisors. The lawyers will only work on tasks assigned by memorandums, and that's the legal group's task to draft them. There will be coordination between the two groups, and we are encouraging the legal advisors to participate to as many calls as possible to get as close as possible to where discussions take place on substance. And that's the case for the Working Party 1 meeting tomorrow, as well as the Working Party stress test meeting tomorrow, and the Working Party 2 meetings when they're set up. And the goal now is really to focus work on how we can, on whether our proposals are adequate, are legally viable. Of course, there are some other questions which might need immediate attention, but also other questions that will be handled a little bit later. So there's a lot of work for the legal group, and I know Leon has delegated his chairing position of the legal group to Greg for the time when he's taking a well-deserved vacation. Greg, is there a quick update you want to share with the group?
Thank you. It's Greg Shatton for the record. There's not too much to report, although obviously there's been a lot of activity, and I think it's been fairly transparent to the group. As we've seen, we've had comments coming in from counsel. We have, refined our approach in working with our two counsel. We are, looking to have counsel as engaged as possible, especially as we head into the final push toward a draft report. And I think that we have we are hitting our stride at this point. Certainly want to make sure that people, communicate with the legal sub-team, as I indicated on the list earlier today. And I think this is already known, but I underline it. Please, send any emails that should be directed to the legal sub-team and possibly to counsel on the main email list with a clearly marked in the subject matter, question for legal sub-team, referral to legal sub-team, or something of the like, so that it can be picked out from the fire hose of emails that we all suffer under. If there are no other questions, I'll turn it back to you.
Thanks, Greg. And I think we can note and acknowledge that there are some questions being raised at the moment and that they are being channeled through the legal group towards the independent advisors. And I've seen several questions being raised today that you relayed to the legal group. Are there any questions on the way the legal group is proceeding? I think it's important that everyone is comfortable with that. I think that's apparently okay. So, Pedro, would you like to ask for a clarification? Please go ahead. Yes, Pedro.
I think he may be on mute.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now we can hear you.
Okay. That was on mute. Okay. Thank you. Just a quick question. I sent some questions this morning, and Greg kindly forwarded them to the legal sub-team list. And the immediate reaction from all of the lawyers was that they will work on those questions until only if they are formally, assigned to them. So I just wanted to get some clarity on this process of clearly assigning or formally assigning questions to the legal advisors, because I thought when Greg forwarded them to the list, that was already a formal assignment of the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro. I'm happy to clarify that the way we're working is that things will not be, or assignments will not be formally given to the outside counsel unless they're done in a specific memorandum from the legal sub-team or a member of the legal sub-team with authority to the council. So the idea of circulating it to the legal email list was just to make the rest of the legal sub-team aware of your email and a few other emails that came in, and to essentially put it on the agenda for tomorrow's legal sub-team meeting, which is occurring at 1500 UTC, at which point we'd consider how to proceed with regard to formally assigning that matter to counsel.
Okay, it's clear now.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
I think it's good that we've, based on this example, we get clarity on this process, which is important. And so I guess Pedro will be informed of the outcome of the discussion tomorrow after the call.
Yes, perfect. Everyone will be informed, hopefully.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So with that, I suggest we move to the next agenda item, which is the timeline. And before going into the overall CCWG timeline, I just want to focus a moment on our timeline up to the target date of April 21st, which is our target date to finalize our Workstream 1 proposals for public comment. And if you have been carefully listening to this call from the start, you've noticed that next week we're supposed to be discussing the community mechanism from Work Party 1, mission and values from Work Party 2, reconsideration, IRP, all the powers and probably the AOC reviews document from Work Party 1, all in one call. And you are all aware that we don't make decisions on the first call, so we will need two calls on each of these subjects. And 21st of April is just 2 weeks ago, so our current plan has only 4 hours of CCWG calls available for that. So it's becoming increasingly clear that we need extra time to discuss those proposals. Of course, we need to produce them first, but we also need extra calls to discuss them. And so we have started discussing with the rapporteurs and the co-chairs and staff what it would be, how we could arrange this. We would suggest to add extra calls, extra CCWG calls to assess the various proposals on the Thursday, April 16th, the Friday 17th, if possible. One probably on, I think it's not in yellow, but on the Monday, April the 20th, as well as Tuesday the 21st, where we would have two calls, two main calls to hopefully close the last round of discussions. This is very tentative at this point, but we'd like to get feedback on this principle in order to help us make the final discussions and decisions about what goes into public comment. And so we'd like to call if there's any objection at this point that we can start planning these extra calls. Obviously, if we are faster than expected, we would release some of these calls. If we don't have a full enough agenda for one, it would be dismissed. But I think this is a provisional and prudent approach to add extra hours of calls to enable us to formalize the proposals. Are there any objections to this? I don't think we are in conflict with the intensive work days planned for the CWG, which are 13th and 14th of April. So we are, and to answer Cheryl, of course, the idea is to have them as a placeholder in the calendars as soon as possible. Jordan is raising a question regarding translation time, which is a good question and needs to be factored in. It's good that you remind us, Jordan. We need to factor it in into our timeline. And I don't know if Adam or staff has any extra information on that. And it's not meant to have us finish earlier. I don't think it's any way possible, but to see how fast we can do the translation or start some things earlier. What I suggest on translation is we come back to the group with more details after this call and add this as an action item for co-chairs with the help of staff to inform about how we are planning to translate the proposals. If there's no other question, Sebastian, 20th of April would be a full CCWG call, not a work party one call.
That must be in yellow, no?
Yeah, it should be in yellow. That's what I mentioned. An oversight not to put it in yellow. But it will be corrected soon, Sebastian. Robin, your hand is raised.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. I just have a quick comment. I wanted to request again that we get a comment or a link to the new timeline somewhere on the web. I asked for that last week. I know my stakeholder group's pretty eager to see that, and we don't have an actual document that we can put in our hands and share with our members yet, and we really need to get that out ASAP. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. That's my next point on the agenda. So unless Sebastian, is that an all hand? Yes, it was. Okay. So let's move on to this timeline, the overall timeline this time. And we discussed last week around this timeline to and convene that we, the co-chairs, would prepare correspondence to SOAC chairs to inform about the latest developments. And while we were preparing this, we have received some post-meeting feedbacks about concerns that given the fact that there would be two public comments that might lead some stakeholders to overlook public comment one, waiting for public comment two, and that the implementation timeline might also give a signal that it was very much still time to wait before commenting on our proposals. So we have reviewed the timeline as you are now seeing on your screens. Some of the main items, and I turn to Adam and Barry after that, are the face-to-face meeting before Buenos Aires, in order for us to be in in a position to have very informed discussions with each SOAC and with the community at large, based on the input we will receive in public comment number one. Second public comment after Buenos Aires, with a mention that it would mostly focus on outstanding issues. So we are somehow hinting that if items seem to be agreed on after public comment one and discussions in Buenos Aires by just about everyone, public comment two would not necessarily reopen the question. And we were also encouraged, especially by the CWG chairs, to check how we could get some interim commitments or on some of the recommendations by Buenos Aires, especially the ones that would reinforce the CWG proposal. So that's something we are trying to capture into this new timeline. And of course, there is a need to engage with the SOAC's chairs to sort out how we can achieve approval of the post-second public comment proposals between session, if need be, in order to expedite the process a little bit. And that's certainly something that is going to be quite important. So those are the main items. Adam and Barry, would you have anything to add to this
before we open for question and feedback from the group.
Hi, thank you, Matthew. It's Adam. For the record, Adam Peake. I think some of the things that are important here are that to emphasize that the first public comment period, it is the main public comment period, and the supporting organizations and ACs should be aware that we really do need comments at this time. The fact that there is an opportunity for a second public comment should not be seen as an opportunity to delay. The second public comment is really there to take and address issues that are outstanding from the first period of public comment. So it is very important that all of the supporting organizations and advisory groups, advisory councils, do submit and treat the first public comment as the most important comment that we have in this process. We're looking at mechanisms to provide commitments for interim recommendations, and we believe that this will probably be possible. The mechanisms for doing it would be have to be decided. So out of the first public comment, if we have some agreement on certain directions, then we should be able to find mechanisms to sort of endorse those on and commit to those on an ongoing basis so that they will be in place and we don't have to revisit them. And I think that's probably the most important part there. And yes, the second public comment is for those outstanding issues. So I think that's it. Barry, if you have anything to add, I think we could probably move along to taking comments from the group.
Barry, any question? Any additional comment? No. So I see Jordan's hand is up.
Just really briefly, Matthew, I think the only new stuff I think that would be in the second public comment would be if responses to the first tell us that we need to add some powers or tweak the mechanism or something, and the rest might be some detailed design considerations where there was a variety of feedback. So I think if we can get the pattern across to people that the big direction of this accountability package is being settled after the first public comment, and that's really need to make those comments, that's probably the most important message to get to people, not that they won't have a say later on in the detail.
Agreed. It's a good point, Jordan. Any other comments? While questions are, you've been thinking about your questions, I think one of the areas that we will probably need to investigate is how we can have implementation work, some of the implementation work, start as soon as possible so that the lead time of the implementation of our proposals is as short as possible. And that is also an area where we will need to engage with probably the board, but also staff, to ensure that we don't get into a situation where we put our proposals on the table on day one, and then it's approved on day 2 months later, and then it takes another month or 2 months to start implementation work because that's an extra 4 months of lead time. And that's going to be one of the critical points of success for our group overall. So that's a very useful tool that we have with this timeline. And if, unless there's, unless there's any objection, and I think Robin's comment is a comment rather than objection, then we will, as co-chair, try and draft a correspondence on the to the ASO and ACs and to the respective communities to explain this and try and see how we can work together as a community to make things happen as quickly as possible to accommodate the very short window of opportunity that we have.
And Jordan, the question you're raising about implementation manager is indeed one of the questions I think we will need to address by Buenos Aires, how we can start addressing this. Is it me?
No, you're still there.
You are indeed.
Someone isn't.
That is pretty obvious.
Are we still connected?
I hope we are. Let me just check. Is Mathieu still there? So obviously we've lost Mathieu now.
Ah, I can hear you.
Okay, so please go ahead, Mathieu. Sorry.
Okay. I'm confused and I'm not sure you're listening. Everyone, please signal in the chat if you're listening, if you can hear me. The last question on timeline is our June 19th meeting. For information, we have informed the ICG, which is holding a two-day meeting on 18th and 19th of June, that we were planning to hold this meeting on the 19th. So in conflict with the second day of their meeting, and there will probably be some coordination with the chairs or vice chairs of ICGs, so that we can both accommodate each other's planning and constraints. But I think it will be extremely important so that we can be very effective in Buenos Aires, and we need to be as effective as possible in Buenos Aires. And I want to acknowledge and thank ICANN for support that they will be providing for this meeting. It was recapped in an email from Adam to the list. Was that yesterday or today? I don't remember. About the support that ICANN was going to provide for members and liaison of our group, so that we, as many of us as possible, are present on Friday the 19th. I think I have covered item number 5 as well. So, conscious of time, I would like to move to item number 6, which is the CWG interrelation and the input. Some of you will have noticed on our mailing list a document that was drafted by Sidley, which is advising the CWG as well as the CCWG. And it was pointed out by Jordan as of relevance to us. And bearing in mind that it has not yet been discussed by the CWG as a whole, and it's still at the status of initial discussion paper from Sidley, I think it's very useful for us to flag where our group and the CWG actually interact and where the CWG is expecting us to act. And I just would like to quote a part of the overview section, and maybe if we can scroll down a little bit on the document, you will see this section, which references what the CWG would be expecting, according to Sidley at this point, and I stress that, from us. And it would be expecting that the accountability mechanisms provide the multi-stakeholder community with enhanced means to, number one, influence ICANN board composition, including through potential removal of individual directors and recall of the entire board. So that's an item I think we've discussed today. Number two, limit the ability of the ICANN board to make unilateral changes to key fundamental bylaws. So that's an item which is currently under Work Party 2. Approve certain ICANN board decisions, for example, that relate to budget or key policies or strategies. That's an area where we're more in a veto rejection approach than approval, but maybe the scope needs to be worked out, but I think that's very consistent with what we're working on in Work Party 1. And number 4, provide for a strengthened independent review and redress, and I think that's very much at the core of the IRP and reconsideration work currently being taken on by Work Party 2. So just looking at this document right now, I think we can, I see this as a positive sign that we are working in the right direction and that the connection with the CWG should work out, which is good. And it's also a heads up that in the next few days, once the CWG discusses this, we should be ready to receive some more detailed input from them, asking for confirmation that we're working on some or all of these items. And I think this, the document itself is very, very useful. There's a number of interesting perspectives in this. But I wanted to, I think it's important for us to see that the connection with the CWG is working out right now. I know Greg has been involved with this, and is there anything else that could be added from the CWG's perspective about what they would expect from us and how we could anticipate or engage proactively? Silence is good. I'm not asking for
Greg. Greg had to leave at 1:30 the hour because he.
All right. Okay. So Greg left. Sorry, I missed that. So stay tuned on that. And if there's no other comment, I don't think we should delay anymore and move to any other business. Thomas, you had an item for any other business, I think.
Yes, that is correct, and that is just to update the group briefly on a call that we had with the GAO earlier today, we meaning Mathieu and myself, and there was a list of questions that we went through, and this list of questions has been shared with this group earlier. I would like to note that we have prefaced our discussion mentioning that we cannot speak on behalf of the CCWG, but that we're making comments in personal capacity as co-chairs trying to reflect accurately the current status of our deliberations, but that what we're doing is an iterative process and that therefore the group's recommendations as we currently frame them or captured them might be subject to change. So in terms of substance, we more or less sticked to what we have put or what is publicly available in documents that have been produced, for example, the co-chair statement which captured the interim results of our work and the progress made so far. I would also like to highlight that we've asked what the exact procedure would be in using results of or other the answers that we provided, and we were informed that this set of questions has been asked to a variety of stakeholders. Community members, and that the GAO will put together a report that will be shared with us so that we have the opportunity to review whether what we have been quoted with is an accurate reflection of what we actually said or intended to say. So if we receive this draft and if there's something in there which is not exactly covered by publicly available materials, then we will share that with the whole CCWG. And that is to say that without our permission or without us having the opportunity to review the report, no report will be published. But once this approval is given, there will be a report that will be shared publicly and that everybody can look into. So we've offered to provide more information as we move on. We've also said that we're working in an iterative fashion so that our findings might change as we move on. But it was interesting to see that the GAO was very much aware of where we are, so they did know the documents that we are discussing and even made reference to current document versions that we're working on. So I think that that they are pretty much aware of where we are and what we're doing, and that they accurately reflect that in their report. I think I should leave it there. We owed you a response to this because there has been some discussion on this request for a telephone call earlier, and this is just to briefly let you know what the discussion was about. And back over to you, Mathieu.
Any, would be very short, if there's any other business that some of the colleagues want to raise now. And if not, I will only conclude by reminding everyone that we are sprinting, and so all contributions are welcome to enable us to finalize our proposals by the target date of April 21st. There will be many calls. There will be many discussions, and I'm sure we'll keep this very productive by staying in this open mind that is characteristic from our group now. And I'm looking forward to these discussions, and grateful to the rapporteurs and their teams who are doing a tremendous amount of work right now to produce this in a timely manner. So with that, I think we can close this call, and I thank you all for your participation and talk to you very soon.
Thank you.